podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
All of your games, Clayton, for Arsenal before Champions League fixtures are away.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everybody. My name's James. Welcome to the People's Poll podcast, where this week I gave the Twitter users or X users the choice of two topics. The runner-up and the vote's already been posted on Patreon. That was the potential to vote on us to discuss our UEFA Champions League fantasy drafts, which we discussed and Clayton decided to chop up halfway through. But for you today, we're going to be having a look ahead at the schedule, which is related to Champions League, but it's very much more FPL focused, and a discussion on the eight teams that are in European competition this year, and have a look at some of the spacing and fixtures that these clubs have both before and after European fixtures. How are you, Clayton?
I'm good.
Are you excited for your own team, Arsenal's return to the Champions League?
I'm very excited.
Say that through gritted teeth, obviously.
Yeah, I can't wait. And obviously, lucky enough, I've got a ticket, so I'll be there. And yeah, hearing the anthem again. And yeah, it's just been far too long. Cannot wait.
God, I wish I hadn't asked that question. All right, so we're going to have a look at the clubs, as said, in Europe. Obviously, Champions League is restarting tonight. Then we've got game week six. In between game week six and seven, there are Carabao Cup fixtures. So I think it's fair to assume. I mean, do we look at the eight teams in the first instance, Clayton, and think at this stage anything but mass rotation in the Carabao Cup?
Yeah, I'd assume it'll be that way.
I mean, you at Brentford next Wednesday, for example, is that second team, is it?
I'd assume so, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it will, even like Newcastle, Manchester City playing each other, I think that's mass rotation, for example. After the Carabao Cup fixtures, we've got Premier League fixtures, where, interestingly, all eight Premier League teams play on the Saturday. Then European fixtures again, then game week eight. And we've got an international break, followed by game week nine. European fixtures in between 9 and 10, and then Carabao Cup fourth round in between 10 and 11. I think that's important to mention, because that's clear opportunities for teams to mass rotate. I think even then, fourth round of the Carabao Cup. European fixtures again, between 11 and 12. That's match day four of the Champions League. Then we've got international break after 12. We return with match day 13. There's a couple of interesting intricacies about that particular week that I want to cover off. Match day five of the Champions League, and then there's four consecutive Premier League weeks. Match week 15 in between 14 and 16 is a set of midweek fixtures. Then the final match day of the Champions League is after match day 16, the following midweek, which is also going to clash with the Carabao Cup quarterfinals, is also when Manchester City are due to play their Club World Cup final. That's on Friday the 22nd of December, hence why their fixture against Brentford, scheduled for the following day, has been postponed. We have no clarification yet of when Manchester City's semi-final is likely to be. The reason why I highlight that is it'll probably be, I imagine, Tuesday the 19th of December. If it's Monday the 18th, does that put any doubt into the Crystal Palace fixture in game week 17? I would assume that City's semi-final in the Club World Cup would likely be Tuesday 19th, and the Crystal Palace fixture would have to be on Saturday the 16th, because quite surprisingly, the UEFA delegates have scheduled Manchester City's final Champions League game on a Wednesday the 13th, which happens to be my birthday, actually, rather than Tuesday the 12th, which happens to be my dad's birthday, interestingly. Ah,
no way.
There is probably space. I'd mentioned this a few times about City, if they did get to the Carabao Cup quarterfinals, potentially being in this same headache situation that Liverpool had a few years ago, where they had to play the kids in a Carabao Cup quarterfinal at Villa Park against Aston Villa. There is potentially space in game week 20 for City to play their quarterfinal then. And that may delay the rescheduling of a fixture against Brentford. But until we absolutely know with certainty when the World Club Cup semi-final is going to be, we can't say that with certainty. I imagine 95% of the Crystal Palace fixture in game week 17 should be fine. What we can know looking at these future fixtures, I think is really important, is spacing between games. And dealing with the immediate, looking ahead to this week, there's only one team that's got a three-day turnaround from European Champions League fixture and Premier League fixture. That is Manchester United. Do you, Clayton, see Manchester United rotation as likely at Burnley on Saturday evening?
No.
No, neither would I. I think where Manchester United are an interesting case, unlike, I think, the other three Champions League teams, City, we know, will do, Pep will do what he wants anyway, but perhaps more for Arsenal and Newcastle, where this is, let's at least say, for yours, Champions League, and for Newcastle, obviously, a new process, is more unpredictability. Sure, United have tougher fixtures on paper being in the Champions League rather than Europa League, but we know that Ten Hag picked quite a strong team fairly regularly in Europa League last year. So for people who have like Rashford and Fernandes as an example, or Nana, who I guess would be the three owned United players at the moment, people may be going in for Rasmus Højlund, who might be more of a doubt under this circumstance. I wouldn't have any concerns about them starting at Burnley.
No, not
on Saturday, to be honest. What's clear here in terms of the four teams that are in the Europa competitions, so Liverpool, Brighton, West Ham are in Europa League, Aston Villa in Europa Conference, all the way through, three-day gaps, Thursday to Sunday. There isn't any circumstance that I can see where there's going to be a four-day break afterwards. Even the ones that we don't know yet, the fixtures can't be arranged for Monday night, so it is going to be three-day gaps for turnarounds. So, for example, Liverpool are going to go into a three-day gap before they play West Ham United this weekend. It's the same for the other three. It's also the same for Villa in Europa Conference League. And also they're going to have a five-day gap beforehand from Premier League fixtures to the Thursday fixtures. I think there's one or two circumstances where it might only be a four-day break beforehand. I think that's Liverpool and Aston Villa both play on a Sunday in match day 11. But I think four-day gaps generally is fine. It's these with the 3 days that are most concerning. How strong do you see, Clayton, Liverpool, Brighton, West Ham and Villa treating their Europa competitions this season?
Liverpool in the group stage, not at all. I think when I say not at all, I think there'll be kind of 5-6 changes regularly to their... what their strongest 11 is in the Europa. I think they don't really need to go that strong with the group they've got. So I don't think they'll go that serious until the knockout rounds. Brighton, I feel like they kind of rotate regularly anyway, right?
As Manchester United fans will testify on Saturday.
Yeah, so with Brighton, I feel like, me personally, it doesn't really affect too much of my thinking in terms of their assets anyway, because I think when I got their assets, I always... kind of know. Well, we saw Stupinan wasn't in the squad at all. So I kind of know they're going to rotate anyway. West Ham and Villa, I actually think, will go quite strong. And again, I think the way I'm assessing it is like what you said about Man United in terms of I'm not expecting rotation. I also think it's because of they don't have the luxury to rotate as much in terms of the quality of options that are available. Whereas Liverpool can
kick a man while he's down, mate.
No, not in a dig way. Just I don't know.
I know what you mean. Liverpool could go a completely different front three in the Premier League to the Europa. Yeah, it doesn't feel that way with United at the moment. I get what you're saying.
Yeah, I meant it that way.
They can, but they won't. It's probably more the point.
Yeah.
Just because there's such a disparity between Fernandes and Rashford to the, let's be honest, the likes of Pulisic, Garnacho, Amad Diallo, if he gets a look in, a real young players. Whereas a Liverpool, you know, fart around between Diaz, Jota, Gakpo,
and
Nunes,
the level
and
drop at all. And then as a result, I think teams like West Ham and Villa will just, I think it's a new competition for them. So I think they'll treat it quite strongly, to be honest, and go for it. I can't actually remember what Moyes' selection was last year in the early stages of the Conference League.
Kind of mix and match. He tended to sort of make 6-7 changes, generally speaking. But you would get, you know, Declan Rice would play here or there, or Antonio would play here and there, for example. But he tended to change a lot, but not all.
Villa's obviously the interesting one, though, because that's on everyone's tip of the tongues at the minute in terms of going for their assets, right? So I think trying to predict them's probably the interesting one out of the kind of Europa lot.
Yeah, it's interesting. You look at certain ways, and give a couple of examples of this where we'll have caution. So let's use Villa as a reference point here. So obviously to go to Legia Warsaw this week on Thursday, challenging away game. There will be changes, but I don't think he's going to change all 11, for example, then there's Chelsea on Sunday. You've got that three-game tight turnaround. Perhaps more interesting is looking further ahead at actually their really good run. A lot of people are aware, sort of, you could say, I mean, you could argue it from now. Sorry, Chelsea fans, that Villa come into a good run, or Brighton, even in seven for the offensive players, is still absolutely fine. But then there's a really good run, Wolves, West Ham, Luton, Nottingham Forest and Fulham between game weeks 8 and 12. Now, in between those two periods, they play AZ Alkmaar twice, which is likely to be the most challenging, and I'd say that's a challenging opponent in the Conference League. They got to the semi-finals and were obviously beaten by West Ham last year. You look at things like them going to Alkmaar 3 days before they play Luton at home, and then the return with Alkmaar is 3 days before playing Fulham at home. Should we, from a fantasy perspective, have a consciousness of that? Because particularly for Villa, I'm not seeing that being mentioned at all. Like, you look at game week 10 in Luton at home, oh yeah, I want Watkins, Diaby, or others. Is it possible that they don't start the Luton game?
Oh, it's 100% possible. I think my personal thing is, it's so far out right now to worry about that. And I think, of course, there's something to call out. And yeah, if things go as you'd expect and you're looking at the spacing that you've just mentioned there, that looks like a logical game where they can afford to. I don't think they'll do the kind of change 6-7 of the 11, but if they do want to give one or two a breather, yeah, I do agree that looks like the one. But I don't know, it just feels so far out to actually let that affect your transfer planning right now.
Yeah, no. I get that, and I agree. And I'd say probably, I mean, West Ham actually have, with Freiburg and Olympiacos, there's a couple of challenging Europa League games they've got there as well,
yeah.
As well as the brilliantly named Bakatopola, who I never knew was a team.
I'd never heard of that, yeah.
A couple of weeks ago. But they, for example, after their doubleheader with Olympiacos, which is their middle two fixtures, the following two fixtures are Everton at home and Nottingham Forest at home, respectively. So let's say Mohamed Kudus gets in the team in the next couple of weeks. Like, do we expect him to be playing those Thursday games and Sunday games? And what's the priority for West Ham? The start they've had as well, it's worth mentioning, because the start they've had, West Ham obviously got themselves in trouble in the league last year. The start they've had already kind of means they're not going to this year, yeah. I think. Especially with a decent turn of fixtures themselves coming up. Basically from sort of when they play Everton around about game week 10, they've got a really good run themselves up to sort of game week 17 or so. What does Moyes do there? Does he, and as a player, is someone like Kudus knocking on the door going, I want to play the Europa League games against Olympiacos? Like, do you think that comes into thinking or not?
I don't know. I don't think certain players will be saying, oh, I want to play in this competition and not this. I think every player, I think, at this level just wants to play every game, but obviously that's not really possible. How they manage it is probably going to be information that we're not privy to in terms of what's their actual physique status and all of that sort of stuff. And then I think even West Ham, their offensive options are so strong. I think they can afford to kind of rotate one or two. And I think this is the thing. Like, I don't believe many of these teams, once it gets in the thick of it, will like mass rotate. I think you'll see two things. I think you'll see the use of like flexing the five subs and kind of take people off early, which is why I'm sure we'll talk about it later. Like, I'm more than comfortable with Trippier than I think most people seem to be.
Yeah, he'll play the majority, winning.
Yeah, but so I think the two things we'll see is you'll see managers really flexing the kind of five subs and utilising that, and then also just making two changes in a team which kind of affords people to have a breather and stuff rather than wholesale changes.
Yeah, that's fair. Brighton is a bit of a mare. Brighton's mare for a couple of, one you've already alluded to, Clates, is obviously they're going to rotate anyway, even if they didn't have European football. But obviously they've got a very challenging Europa League group. I've spoken about this a number of times, that they're going to be really up for it. It's the first time the club's ever got into European competition. And they've got dream trips there with, I mean, AEK Athens, home, reasonable opening game, but even a trip to Athens is brilliant. Trip to Marseille, trip to Ajax Amsterdam. Ajax is
so good.
Ajax is not bad, by the way. It's a nice place, that. Nice. Never mentioned that before. But brilliant trips for Brighton, and very brilliant home games for them. And I think probably, I mentioned in the past that I thought Brighton fans would probably get pretty annoyed if De Zerbi went under strength in Europa. But results like Saturday, won't half help.
Yeah.
Where, oh, suddenly Estupinan's not in the team. Solly March is not in the team. Billy Gilmore's not in the team. Evan Ferguson not in the team. Still go to Old Trafford. He changed the goalkeeper again. Yeah. Still go to Old Trafford and win. And therefore, I think Brighton fans are probably quite accepting of rotation. But it's quite clear when you look through their run that the likes of even Mitoma, he's not playing every game in here,
no
is
chance.
He? And it might be that fantasy managers like me who own him get lucky with Europa. But I'd look at certain things like, again, it's interesting, theirs as well, the double header they've got in the middle is Ajax. Two fixtures after Ajax, respectively, are Fulham at home and Sheffield United at home. And I can't help but look at them and think, well, if Matoma's going to get left out of one of them, I bet it's not the Ajax game, you know?
Yeah.
And how much should we factor these things when we're looking into FDRs for our players? Should we kind of downgrade the... Sheffield United would be a green fixture, whether you're doing your fixture difficulty ratings or whatever sites you use, etc. But should we look at that as a more difficult... Put it almost market as a more difficult fixture
because of the minutes.
Because of expected minutes. Yeah. And I guess this is where things like your review sites will do expected minutes models possibly come into play and have more prominence over this period. Because I keep thinking with Mitoma and Estupinan, I keep thinking, sure, after Bournemouth this week, there's a tough run of fixtures coming. I mean, even just add for Brighton, Villa away, Liverpool home, Man City away, and you're putting Marseille away in the middle of that as well. But I keep thinking, oh, it's a great run again from game week 10. Fulham, Everton, Sheffield United, not in the Forest. But I'm putting Ajax away in the middle of that.
I know.
As well.
So would you let that affect your planning then, in terms of potential? So let's just say looking to bring in Mitoma for that run.
We'd all be guessing with Brighton particularly, right?
Yeah.
And we're also guessing with them just every week generally anyway. But I do wonder how I feel if I carry a Mitoma through, and again, as kind of discussed on yesterday's pod, should we even look at the difficult fixtures as difficult for them? You know, low blocks like Fulham and Sheffield United might be more challenging anyway. But should I look and go, oh, what if I hold on for, say, Fulham at home, Everton away, and Sheffield United at home, he's only starting one out of three, maybe? Like, we should go, shouldn't he?
Yeah.
But then would you move to someone like Diaby? Oh, sugar, and I've just said about Villa playing Luton at home after they played to Alkmaar. And it does make me wonder if maybe more we should look away from teams in Europe. Like, I think those like me, have you got Alvarez at the moment?
No, but I'm looking to get him in.
So we've both found him in our UCL fantasy team, and I think that kind of scratched an itch and stuff. But yeah, it's like, oh, right, he's playing regularly now. I want to look at that.
Yeah.
It's like, what, we've let this opening period go and now the European fixtures are coming and now I want to add him in? And should we look at ignoring these? Because I can't help but think Liverpool, Villa, and to a slightly lesser extent West Ham, are in the coming weeks about to come into a really good run of fixtures. Do we get put off by those teams? And Brighton, again, it comes back great in game week 10. Do we get put off by these teams? Or should we be put off of these teams because of rotation, because of European involvement? Should we more be looking at Tottenham's and Chelsea's and Brentford's, for example, who don't have... I mean, Tottenham, bar one or two changes, you know exactly what you're getting on Sunday. And we do with Arsenal as well, in fairness, because of the fixture. But perhaps, you know, when you go to Lons, which is 3 days after you go to Bournemouth... And then, maybe like Bournemouth away, there's more question marks here.
Yeah,
for example,
this is where, like, I guess specifically for my team, Arsenal, I think in terms of rotation, you're only going to see one or two people changed, and I think he'll kind of manage the load over a group of fixtures. So I don't think he's going to look at specifically, okay, Lens away is 2-3 days after Bournemouth. I think he's just going to look at the whole block and kind of share the minutes accordingly, and therefore rotate one or two people. And so, like, if that's the way I'm anticipating rotation goes, I'm willing to roll the dice on it. If I miss one game, so what? I miss one game, sort of thing.
Let's have a look at these 3 day gaps for the Champions League teams. So, I mean, City, Arsenal, and Newcastle have both just been through 3 day gaps before their European fixture this week. We didn't really see too much in terms of rotation. I guess we did with Newcastle, with Isak starting, for example. But then Isak played a lot more in the internationals than Wilson did, for example. Okay. And I think that was part decision. Almiron also coming back from Paraguay, and he may have picked up a small knock as well. Obviously, Joel Linton's got a problem now. That's part why Anderson's coming to the team. Tonali also had a knock. So maybe it wasn't as rotation heavy as it might have felt.
Yeah.
City and Arsenal didn't particularly feel like rotation at the weekend, did it? We know you're going to get bits like Aki versus Guardiola and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You didn't rotate Sunday.
No.
Or was that, could he have left Havertz out, we're thinking, for this week?
I think that was purely Havertz hasn't done great personally recently, and Vieira's looked good when he's come on. And I think it was as simple as that, really.
So, as said, United have got a 3-day gap then before we play Burnley. We've said no major concerns about that. After game week 7, and it's worth saying again, before game week 7 is Carabao Cup fixtures, where we expect pretty much all these European teams to mass rotate. You have a 3-day gap, as mentioned, from Bournemouth to Lens, and in United also another 3-day gap, Crystal Palace at home, Galatasaray at home. Does that come into the thinking? The fact that, say, United have 2 home games and a 3-day gap and you have 2 away games, I realise Lons is basically like staying within the country. In fact, Bournemouth to Lens, you might as well just...
It's
down the road, isn't it? Basically. It's like having 2 London derbies, isn't it? You might as well just stay down south for a few days.
Yeah, I know. For United, I don't worry. I think people like Bruno, he's going to play every bloody game. Like, he's so durable. And even the likes of Rashford and stuff. I think if United had... If the vibes around the club were a bit better at the minute, I think maybe he'd try and kind of give someone like Rashford a breather. But I just don't think they're in a position to afford any slip-ups right now. So I think they'll just go strong every game possible until medically they're told they can't. And with Arsenal, I think... So, like, Saka's the one where I see a lot of questions about him. How we talk about Bruno, I think we just need to start talking about Saka in that light. Because I've been saying as a fan... For years, he needs a break. He needs a rest. And it just doesn't happen. And I think Arteta's been so vocal about these guys needing, if they want to be considered some of the top players, they just have to play every game. And like, I'm not comparing him to this player, but you look at the Messis and the Ronaldos, they play every game. And you never question, oh, is he going to get a breather?
Yeah, I've said this a few times about Haaland recently as well.
Exactly. Yeah, same thing. So, no worries with Saka for me personally. I think, sure, if we get to kind of match day 5 in the Champions League and the group's done, or even 4, then yeah, sure, maybe. But even that, maybe it'll be in the Champions League he gets a breather and he goes strong in the league. So, yeah, with Arsenal, I very much think it'll be 1 or 2 changes here and there. And I wouldn't let that affect your decision-making personally in terms of if you really want a Saka or an Odegaard. And Man United, like I said, I think they'll go strong. City, it's week in, week out, you kind of, the tactical predictions are quite difficult.
So you've got 2 more kind of 3-day gaps between Premier League and Champions League games. So after Chelsea away in 9, you go to Seville.
Yep.
And also after the Seville home game, there's 3 days before Burnley at home.
Yeah.
You look at them fixtures and feel any differently about it. I mean, Chelsea away and Seville away together within 3 days is quite challenging.
You need to remind me on this one. I've got lost on the spreadsheet. So we're going Chelsea away
in game week 9, then 3 days later you go to Seville, and you've also got Seville and then Burnley at home in 12, 3 days after that as well.
You missed the Sheffield United one there, right?
Yeah, because it's a 4-day gap. That's why I didn't mention it, mate.
All right, cool. No, I was getting confused there. I think with those, so like Chelsea away, Seville away, I think he's just going to go... I think that's one where... It will be the strongest team possible for both of them. And it will be hopefully in a game state where we can afford to kind of just flex to 5 subs and rotate through that. But I think these players are capable of actually doing the 3-day gaps as well. I think we saw it in the Europa League last year as well. I think it personally, this stuff gets overblown a tad.
Yeah, but does easier fixtures not make it a little bit more likely? So to give a different example away from Arsenal, so Manchester United in game week 9 play Sheffield United in an 8:00 kickoff on the Saturday. Then they play Copenhagen on the Tuesday. Now, if anybody is thinking of going against Haaland over that period, then sure, there's Liverpool at home to Everton that week, but also Manchester United go to Sheffield United, maybe a Rashford or a Fernandes. And similarly, in game week 12... United have Luton at home 3 days after going to Copenhagen. And again, Haaland goes to Chelsea that weekend. So this is the sort of one maybe you want to take it on. But do we get to that point and start getting fearful? Because that game week 12, to give you an example, Arsenal are at home to Burnley 3 days after Champions League game. Manchester United are at home to Luton 3 days after Champions League games. Rashford, Fernandes, Saka, Odegaard, whatever you fancy over that period, you could take Haaland on away to Chelsea, who has a 5-day gap before the trip to Chelsea.
Yeah. And it depends on the state of the groups, right? That's the thing. Like, that dictates a lot of it as well, which right now we have no idea how things go. Like, right now, this is going to come back to bite me, but I'm confident that Arsenal will qualify fairly early because I back us against the teams, and it's what you said. I think teams in our group will take points off each other. So if you're then getting to that stage where we've got Burnley at home after Seville, then that changes the conversation, of course.
Okay. A lot of people think this Newcastle rotation you've already alluded to is something that could definitely be being overplayed, and I get it. It's obviously a three-day gap from Brentford Saturday to go into Milan tonight. But then there's a five-day gap from Milan to Sheffield United, further on Burnley to PSG, and then on to West Ham. There's a four-day gap between those three fixtures. After Crystal Palace at home, there's a four-day gap before they play Dortmund. Then the first time they hit the three-day gap is after they host Dortmund, they go to Wolves in game week 10, which you could argue might be coming towards the end of their run. So do we largely think with Newcastle that the likes of what you said with like Trippier, just think he'll play all the games?
I think it's fine. That's what, because I feel like the narratives that I've seen on my timeline were groups got announced, everyone was like, oh my gosh, Trippier's going to get mass rotated. And first thing I did was just went and looked at the spacing. And I was like, this looks chill, personally, as simple as that. And even that, if there's games against like Sheffield United, where, I don't know, they're winning, things are going well, just take him off early. I think it'll be a case of, I've not got any information to go off previously with Eddie Howe in Europe, but I think it'll be a case of he'll just go strong, like really strong, start every game as strong as he can, and then look to take people off if things are going to plan.
I think it's more the offensive players that will change anyway. Like Isak and Wilson is,
yeah, exactly,
is going to be naughty from that perspective.
Yeah, that one I'd avoid like the plague personally.
Yeah, I think, and there's a lot of people looking at Anthony Gordon who's on four yellow cards, for example, and I just think we probably want a little bit more information here, personally.
So where are you at on the kind of Newcastle defensive rotation? And
looking at it more in detail in terms of the spacing, I mean, Newcastle's worst spacing is now, and I don't think any of us would doubt that Kieran Trippier will play in Milan. Okay, afterwards, two games in 3 days, might be a bit of fatigue there, but then it's 5 days of Sheffield United.
Exactly.
Like, I can't see that Howe would go, oh, I'm going to save Trippier for the Carabao Cup game against Man City next week. Like, I know Newcastle fans want to win a trophy, but I just don't see that. So I think Sheffield United, Burnley, yeah, definitely. West Ham's a four-day gap after PSG. Palace is after the internationals, where Trippier, let's be honest, is unlikely to play, say, 180 minutes over that period. Then Dortmund at home. So I think you probably your first bit of major alarm actually might be game week 10 away to Wolves, to be totally honest. On City, their spacing is not bad either. So actually, before and after that, if we remove the Carabao Cup games from the thinking, up until they play Bournemouth in 11, they've always got at least a four-day gap between Premier League and Champions League games. So, I mean, like, the whole world and its dog is obviously going to captain Haaland at home to Nottingham Forest this week. Like, would there be any alarm at all from that perspective?
Nah.
What about for Alvarez, though? We're looking at, we want him, but could it be that, he's played at West Ham, then he plays Red Star Belgrade on Tuesday evening, then Forest Saturday? Any concern from that perspective?
From a fatigue perspective, no, not for me.
So the first time it comes around, there's a three-day gap for City after this current one, is game week 11, they play Bournemouth at home and they play Young Boys at home 3 days later. I don't think the question is, like, will Haaland get left out for either of them? It's probably how many goals will he score in those two games is probably more the question, isn't
it? Yeah, 100%. But in general, in that period, again, if depending how they've got on, is that the final?
So that's the fourth match day. Yeah. Obviously, the spacing between match days 5 and 6, we can't know. There are a few little clues we can have. Like, I could say now, for example, that because of City's involvement in the Club World Cup, they're only going to get a three-day gap between their final Champions League game and Crystal Palace at home in 17, but it'll probably already be through. For yourselves, Clayton, you'll have Villa and then PSVs on a Tuesday. You're going to have to play Villa on the Wednesday. I'm certain of that because of the knock-on of TV selections. And then you'll have PSV the following Tuesday. So you're definitely going to have a three-day gap in between those fixtures, for example. Similarly for Manchester United, after they play Bournemouth and then Bayern Munich, 3-day gap. That's because the midweek fixture's in 15. It's Villa you play on the weekend. It's whoever you play in 15, you're going to have to play in the midweek. I think it's Luton away.
Okay.
Yeah. So you'll end up with the Villa will have to be the Saturday. I'm pretty sure that Sky will stitch you up and put Arsenal Wolves on a Sunday that forces the Luton game on a Wednesday. Then you'll end up with a period of Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Tuesday. Sure. But this isn't up till game week 14.
Yeah,
it does feel, if that is the circumstance, it does feel too far away to be thinking about it. But there is a couple of other that I do want to highlight. And I think one elephant in the room is we haven't mentioned international breaks.
Yeah.
As part of spacing it. And I think a good example is what we just saw with Liverpool against Wolves. And it might be easy narrative and it might be coincidental, but obviously the South American players did not start at Wolves at the weekend. And after the next international break, they have Everton in a 12:30 kickoff. And Liverpool fans will know Klopp has often gone into this fixture over the years and not been bothered about mass rotating for Everton at home. And he doesn't, it's the Merseyside derby. You just look at it as a fixture against a side who's going to put a low block up. I can rotate if necessary. And that's one, again, where you could make the debate. Obviously, Salah at home to Everton. Haaland plays Brighton. If you were taking Haaland on, captain Salah. Isn't Salah the only one other that you can captain in the 12:30 kickoff? Wasn't that the rule that people were making?
Yeah. Never back the early kickoff unless
also it's Salah. What's perhaps interesting, something to keep in your mind, is game week 13. And I guess this wouldn't impact Premier League rotation, but that's straight after an international break. And there were two pretty big clashes that weekend. City play Liverpool and Newcastle play Chelsea. Those two fixtures, because City and Newcastle will both play on the Tuesday afterwards, have to be on the Saturday. It does mean there's more chance of you going to Brentford on the Sunday and Manchester United going to Everton on the Sunday, which might mean that all three teams there have a 3-day gap before their Champions League fixture. Is quite possible. Tottenham also play Aston Villa that weekend, so there's some competitive TV fixtures, if you will. But Newcastle, Chelsea, Manchester City, Liverpool will have to stay on the Saturday in match week 13. Can you imagine Klopp's reaction if TNT get hold of City Liverpool and it's 12:30 in match week 13? He will lose his absolute mind. To be fair, Guardiola wouldn't be happy about it either. I suspect, therefore, those two games might be 5:30 and 8 o'clock, actually, on that particular weekend. Before we finish up, there's a few interesting things in terms of the fixtures before and after and how they look. So, for example, all of your games, Clayton, for Arsenal before Champions League fixtures are away.
All of them?
Every single one before you play a Champions League game is an away game.
Interesting.
Every single one after is a home game. What do you make of that?
How do you
feel about that as a fan?
I'll be honest, it's not really affected my thinking too much. Like, even hearing it now, I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. Does it affect things too much? Not sure. Obviously, there's ones in there that we've got, like Chelsea away, Newcastle away, Brentford, Villa. Like, yeah, a few of them are tough. But then some of the home ones, like with respect to them, like Sheffield United, Burnley at home, I think.
But then this is it. Are they then potentially ripe for rotation?
Yeah, but this is like Arteta won't mass rotate a team. He will only.
But we've got no experience or prior knowledge to Mikel Arteta managing a team after being in Champions League.
No, true, but it's just the way he speaks about comments and stuff. Like, he will only make two or three changes because I think he believes so much in the kind of rhythm and fluidity of a team. He doesn't like disrupting key parts of chemistry and stuff. He will only rotate two or three players. And the Europa League, sure, he went and mass rotated, but I think the level of competition there was different. I think now it's a different story with us.
Is it a different story for Liverpool? Five of their fixtures after Europa League games, which are obviously nearly always going to be on a Sunday, are at home. Is that more alarming?
I think...
Because of, like what you said, the quality between, say, Diaz, Jota, these players is more... Yeah. It's not as clear.
I think that's part of it with Arsenal as well. I don't think Arsenal's attacking depth options are actually top quality compared to Liverpool's. And I think it's because of that strength and depth. I absolutely think... I mean, he rotates them anyway, right? So, yeah, I definitely think there's kind of alarm bells. But, for example, I wouldn't let that put it... I'm not letting it put myself off going to Salah and just kind of rolling with it.
I don't know if it's intentional that this happened or it's just a freak coincidence, but the three teams in Europa League, on the Sundays after their involvement in Europa League, Liverpool have five home fixtures, Brighton's first four are all home fixtures, and West Ham have five home fixtures on Sundays after the Thursday. So out of the combined 18 fixtures there's what, 15 home games after Europa League games for Liverpool, Brighton and West Ham.
Might have been scheduled on purpose.
I don't know if it's just a coincidence, or clubs are entitled to put requests in, right? And when the fixture scheduling is done, and a lot of this is normally down to, like, we had a movement last night when Nottingham Forest played Burnley on a Monday night. It wasn't an original TV selection. It was moved originally, like the Forest-Sheffield United game in game week 2. It was a request from Nottingham Forest due to a clash with the cricket, where they didn't want football and cricket event on in the same city on the same weekend. Now, whether they requested to change it or afterwards went, oh, sugar, that's a problem. Because it does seem, it would have been easy to probably go, right, Forest, you go 1-3-4 and home and beat away 2-5 and would have had a very different starting fixture list, for example. But clubs can put in requests. There's nothing to say that clubs can't put in requests and say, we want as many home games after European games as possible. Like, yeah. I have no idea if that happens or not. But it does seem, for the Europa League games particularly, quite a bit of a coincidence for a little bit of balance. Villa have two home games after Conference League games, whereas the Europa League teams obviously have a lot. But for all we know, the other three put requests in and Villa don't. I have no idea.
Yeah, but what would be, in your opinion, what would be the advantage? Because you have to go away.
It's the travelling, isn't it? If you're in Europa, think of it from this perspective. Before you play in Europa, you're going to get a 5 or 4 day break. Unless you're unlucky and Sky put you on a Monday night. True, that might happen to you once. You had it a few times when you're in Europa. You might have like Thursday, Monday, Thursday, for example, particularly later in the season maybe. But at this stage, you're highly likely to get a 4 day break and it could be a 5 day break, right?
Yeah. True.
Whereas afterwards, you're going to be lucky if you get the 4 day break, it's going to be free. So if it takes a little something out of the travelling.
Yeah. But what about for the Champions League teams? Because I feel like that more or less evens itself out.
But with that, there'd be no point putting a request in before the start of the season in the same way, because you've no idea if you're going to play Tuesday, Wednesday.
Yeah.
Whereas in Europa, you know what you've got. It's going to be the Thursday football, unless there's clashes with, I think there's one Europa League game on Wednesday night, for example, because UEFA don't want two games in the same city or something. But generally, 98%, you're going to end up with Thursdays throughout in Europa. So I don't know how you could request it in the Champions League in the same way. And it's not to say these clubs did request it. It's just something I noticed.
Yeah,
and
good spot.
It does add to the idea a little bit more of potential rotation. You look at, like I said, Brighton playing Ajax, Fulham at home 3 days later. Brighton playing Ajax, Sheffield United at home 3 days later. Like, what's the more important games for a Brighton fan?
Oh, yeah.
I'm fairly sure every single one would say the Ajax game. And that's not to mean that he ain't still going to play Mitoma or Estupinan at Fulham at home, Sheffield United. But we should factor that sort of thing
into our
thinking.
With that specific example, though, so you gave a really good point in terms of, do we go for the likes of Tottenham, Brentford, where, yeah, they've got good runs.
You know what I mean is, if you were comparing, say, Mbeumo and Mitoma,
that's what I mean. So right now,
you know Mbeumo's going to play.
But so where would you go then? Like right now, would you let that affect your thinking?
I've got Mitoma, but I've got a Martinelli problem, Claire.
Oh, okay,
so
fair enough.
I might end up with both.
That's an easy one for you then.
But
yeah.
Perhaps a better example would be, because of Villa's run, I'm looking quite a lot at getting Diaby. Now, buying Diaby this week away to Chelsea, jokes aside, doesn't feel like the right time to go and move. But I discussed yesterday that was probably planning Martinelli to Diaby in 8 when you were about to play Man City.
Yep.
So if that was the plan, do I just bring that forward to now? But I've got no knowledge of what Unai Emery intends to do. Like, is he going to play Diaby in Warsaw on Thursday night? Like, I have no idea at this stage. Now, the sensible thing, of course, would be to wait till Friday. But even still, even if let's say he played 90 minutes in Poland, which he probably won't, does that then determine that I shouldn't buy him? Or is he important enough then that it's like, he's gone, right, I want to get this group dealt with quite quickly, you're going to play?
Yeah, and this is, I really think the season has only just started. These guys are not going to be fatigued yet. I really think their capacity to play Thursday, Saturday, Thursday, Sunday is, I think they can do it fine. I think it's more when it gets to the latter stages And the thing I keep stressing, I know I've gone on about it, is the five subs changes things as well. Like, the ability to have a 20-30 minute rest in a game, I think that knock-on impact in terms of you then being able to start another one has a huge impact.
But when you get fantasy assets, you don't want to play 60 minutes.
No, of course.
You want to play 90.
Yeah.
So there's that factor in as well. Like, do we get earlier subs?
Yeah, and that's what I was talking about for my point with like Trippier. If that happens, I actually quite like it as a defender. But yeah, for the attacking options.
I think Trippier, let's say Newcastle were 3-0 up at Sheffield United on Sunday, and Trippier did play tonight and Tuesday, then yeah, there's a possibility 75-80 or so. We saw that a little bit last season even with him. If a game was saved, that occasionally he'd come off early. I mean, yeah. I think it was two occasions he picked up clean sheets actually because he came off early and Newcastle, I want to say Fulham and Southampton away, where they still went on and conceded later in that game, I think. So I think the consciousness for me is that the bottom line, that there's so many unknowns here, right? I'd certainly have a consciousness about things like captaincy, though. I'd have a consciousness about if I was looking to captain, say, Salah against Everton at 9, not because of the European, but straight after the international break, I'd have a consciousness about that. I'd also have a consciousness about some of the home games afterwards. So Forest at home being 3 days after Toulouse, for example, in match day 10. And that's one when Haaland goes to Manchester United. And on paper, look at that. If we just removed ourselves now, if it was game week one, forget ownership and all those things. Haaland's going to Manchester United. Salah's at home tonight in the Forest. Who do we want to captain?
Salah.
Well, I was expecting you to say Saka at home to Sheffield United. But I get your point, Claire. It adds a layer of concern. And there's that as well. I'm going cold on the idea the more I think about it, particularly with them five big chances he missed on Saturday. But the idea of removing Haaland to enable me to get a really powerful Liverpool, how much do I want it? How much do I want it? Because the one thing I would say about Salah, and there's no reason to think Salah's going to play every Europa League game or anything like that, but I bet there will be a couple of occasions where he does play and people panic about it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, why has he played on Thursday?
Yeah.
Liverpool operate this traffic light system, we know that. In terms of it might be, yeah, do you know what? Play against Toulouse, you're in good condition, or maybe you need a little bit more of sharpness. And then suddenly coming to training for Forest, it's like, oh, actually, no, he's pushed too hard there. He needs a break. And we know that's how Liverpool will treat it in terms of their rotation and stuff. So should that be a concern even where we're looking to take Haaland on maybe over these game week 8 and 15? How much does Salah play? And listen, the answer to that is probably going to be 7 out of 8 fixtures.
Yeah.
It might be Sod's Law, one of the ones you want to take on. He might not.
It'll be the one, yeah.
Saka, the real one is that one, game week 10. And with 4 days after Seville and then a potential Carabao Cup fourth round afterwards, no concern. That's a difference, isn't it, I think?
Yep, exactly. Not a concern at all for me.
I just think it's an interesting debate to consider afterwards. I think that in a weird way with the Liverpool, West Ham and Brighton, all those home games after Thursday games might not help.
Yeah,
in a weird if Liverpool going to City on the Sunday after Europa League game, you know he's going to play in a weird
way. Level of
and he's got a good record against them.
To change things up, yeah.
And there are going to be one or two temptations that come up, and it's not even just those players. You know, things like Diaby and Watkins at home to Luton 3 days after a Europa game, we might sit here and go, do you know what? I really want to go for that sort of thing from a captaincy perspective. And I just think, of course, the more I look at it and the more I look at City spacing and stuff, and I think it's all right. I agree with you that the Newcastle thing early on might be being a little bit overplayed. We should have a consciousness of this. And should we do what we'd said about going for Tottenham players, Chelsea players, Brentford players, these teams that aren't in Europe where an Mbeumo's safe? And what's ironic about it is a lot of people will be looking at selling Tottenham and Chelsea players right now. Tottenham because the North London derby is coming up and the difficulty of the fixture and Liverpool afterwards, and Chelsea just because. Maybe that's not the right solution here.
Yeah.
Now, I get if you've got things like Ben Chilwell, then of course you've now walked into a potential headache and you need to fix it, but yeah, until Jackson gets that fifth yellow, I'm not sure I'd be desperate to move it on, for example.
Same.
If I've got Gusto, which I've got, for example, I'm quite happy with that. If you've got Raheem Sterling at the moment, I think there's a few good fixtures before we know Chelsea do come into a real tougher run. With the Tottenham players, if you did go for Son, there's going to be more space on Sunday than there was on the Saturday just gone, ironically.
I don't really get selling. Like, I feel like you guys are capable of scoring against Arsenal, Liverpool.
No, and I think most people probably will be looking to keep their Madisons, and you know, someone like Udogie is probably quite an easy bench for most people this week, understandably. It might even be for some who've got eight good attackers that maybe even you bench Madison, but no, I wouldn't be moving them on at the moment. Similarly, Brentford have got a couple of good fixtures.
Yeah,
I don't know if I'm just banging my head against the wall looking for alternatives to Mbeumo and I should just go there.
Well, I've had him since the start, so I'm...
Like, if I go... if breaking this down, like I said, kind of like Mbeumo versus like a Diaby versus even maybe we should put Jeremy Doku in the conversation, for example, now. And Boomer's the one I know I'm getting the minutes out of. He's the one I know that's on penalties.
That's the thing. If you just simplify it, like he's the best asset, right? But obviously, the way I think our minds are quite similar and we like to try...
I like to attack fixtures.
Same.
And I can't help it.
Yeah, me too. But I think, yeah.
Rather than looking at now and going, oh, and Boomer's got Everton and Forest next, I'm looking at it going, yeah, but Diaby's got this from game week eight. Oh, and possibly a rotation headache that I've got no idea currently how that's going to work. I'm hanging on to Watkins. Like, the only way I can get to Alvarez this week for free is just to sell Watkins.
Yeah,
and I'm holding Watkins because I'm like, that fixture runs too good. That fixture runs too good. I know I'm going to end up buying him back anyway. But now I've got Alvarez in front of my face. I'm sitting there going, I'm not massively concerned about Manchester City rotation. Should I just get on with it?
Yeah, we do like to overcomplicate things, I think. But yeah, I think it's one of those. Like, rotation is inevitable, but I think you just have to assess it week to week, which is so annoying to hear. But unfortunately, I think no one has a crystal ball. And the midweek European... lineups will, not for every team, because obviously City is more done kind of specific tactically for each opposition, but more often than not, I think the minutes that people get in the legs midweek will dictate what you can do on the weekend.
Yeah, I think it's also being consciousness in terms of picking your battles, and what I mean by that in terms of understanding of rotation is, like, this weekend coming, game week six, no major concerns.
Yeah.
And that's because the Carabao Cup fixtures afterwards, where you know everyone's having their breather. The only one I'd be really concerned about this weekend from a rotation perspective is Brighton. And that's just because that's what they do anyway.
Yeah.
That's not to say, like I said, Aki versus Vardiol, Doku versus Grealish if he's back fit, for example. Like, these things aren't a debate. They are, and they are every week
anyway. Exactly, yeah.
But with the Carabao next week, this week should be fine. I think that also means that game week seven should be fine for the majority of teams as well. It's the after the international breaks and also some of them later ones. So sort of looking at, say, game week 10 and 11, I think, looking in between European fixtures either side, has also got Carabao Cup in the midweek in between. Should it be a concern or not?
Yeah, and again, I just think it's one of those, like, the amount of information you'll gather in the next four game weeks, and you'll get to that stage, and like the amount of information we have now will be completely irrelevant to what we kind of gain through learning managers' team selections. Like you said earlier, what does Emery do in Europe? What does Arteta do in the Champions League? Like, we're just making assumptions right now, and I think the information you'll gather in these next three, 4 weeks is going to be so crucial that you'll be able to get to that kind of game week 10 post-international break and be so much more informed to be able to make decisions on it.
All right, couple of quick fires for you.
Go on.
Would you rather have, let's say up till December, if I said now, would you rather have Son or Rashford? Who would you rather have?
I need to quickly glance at fixtures. In general, probably Son. I'd say.
But with Rashford's one, we wouldn't have concern about rotation, right?
No.
Even though he'll have six extra fixtures in there, and maybe even more because Tottenham are out of the Carabao Cup. That's not a rotation concern, right?
No, I don't think he is.
What about if I said Mbeumo versus Diaby?
See, I prefer Mbeumo quite comfortably as an asset.
Okay.
But you're talking about the fixtures that are coming for Diaby, right? So,
yeah. What about like Sterling versus a Diaz? Because that's got its own rotation element with Diaz as well, right?
Mm.
It's got rotation element plus European
I think
Sterling's free, but actually, once you hit sort of game week nine, Chelsea's fixtures are awful.
Yeah, I think I'd go Diaz, to be honest.
So that's interesting,
yeah,
isn't it?
So there's no consistent theme. What are your answers for
The same.
So I mean, Son?
I'd maybe prefer Rashford over Son,
okay,
personally. At the moment, I can't help look at the fixtures and think I'd rather have Diaby than Mbeumo. And I'd also go Diaz over Sterling.
Yeah.
So in all three of those examples, for me, I'm picking the guy that's more liable for rotation on each occasion. Like, do I need to think about that? Because on Boomer as well, you mentioned about earlier subs, it gets 90 minutes now near enough every week as well.
Exactly. And in general, he's just putting up really good numbers as well. He's just a very consistent asset.
Right. Guys, I'm going to look down the lens of this camera and tell you that if I buy Brian and Boomo this week, I apologise to all of you that already do own him because you know what's coming. That's it, Clayton. Interesting conversation. Thank you. I enjoyed that. Anything you want to plug before you go?
Yeah, there's a lovely spreadsheet that I've been looking at. patreon.com/planetFPL. Get involved. And yeah, you can have a look at James's spreadsheet, which is very handy for all of the different formats, especially UCL Fantasy.
I was looking at it as well, but I forgot to bring my charger for my laptop and it dies halfway through this podcast.
I should have just told me I got my key.
I started looking on my phone, it's absolutely fine. Sid should be back with me for the Sky Fantasy Football podcast tomorrow, as said. If you want to catch up on our podcast that me and Clayton did earlier today on our UCL Fantasy drafts, that's available on Patreon as well. Just leaving to say thanks very much to Clayton. Good luck, everyone. Cue music, please. Manchild.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.